Oh, groovy, baby.
Come with me if you want to live.
Oh, no. Are we back? We are back.
We
nice.
Are we? Yeah, cool.
There it is. The little blue thing is
I'm
bouncing.
Here. You're here. That means we're back.
Yes, we are. This is the Indie Circuit, the Radio St. Pete exclusive Indie Circuit, show 191. For those of you keeping track at home, my name is Mal. With me, as always,
Pro Me.
Yes, he's back. Three in a row now.
I know. It's like you gonna put a ring on it?
Yeah.
Or?
So it's officially you're like now the sidekick or the co-host.
You could say co-host is better. You could say as always, and it doesn't ring hollow. You know,
as always. The last three of nine times.
No. Oh, come on. I've done a little
better. I know. You're doing better. So you just got to figure stuff out in the beginning. You know, you have a very hectic and chaotic schedule where I am set a clock by it. Boring.
We were talking about this the other night. You know, when you're alone, you can podcast in the nude, basically.
Basically. Yeah. And I do. How does that make you feel, listeners?
Glad I'm here, I'm sure.
Yeah, so crazy town. We started talking a little bit on off air about interviewing. You know, I recently had a job change, and it was it went well as could be expected, I guess, is what I'm saying. You know, but I was in my other position so long, I didn't know how to apply anymore. Like, I had resumes. I was college schooled, and I came out early 90s, so I had a very strict set of rules, and I was very good at those rules back then. And boy, oh boy, did a lot change since then. Because, yep. I had to
2008 happened.
Yeah, and craziness, you know, and like, you know, on the front end, when I was getting no calls, no replies from anything, I had to, like, go out and web search, why am I not getting responses? And I had learned about all those little spiders that immediately disqualify you 10 seconds in or 1 nanosecond in if you don't have X filled out, if you don't have a resume, if you don't have a cover letter and this stuff. It was just and then as I started learning how to replay the game, then I started getting contacted, you know, stuff. So it was, but boy, is it a weird, if you haven't done it for a while, hey, just for fun, do it. I don't know. It's
you know, that's actually not a good, I mean, that's not a bad, suggestion, just in general. Even if you are securing your job and you've been at it for a while, give it a try, because it's not scary when you don't. The fact that you might not hear back from the first 50 you do is scary, but I mean, it's not a scary process when you don't need that job.
Well, you remember, and that, you know, that was something my father told me many, many years ago. He says, it's always easier to get a job when you have a job.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, and I fell out of that because I did feel. Naively, I felt secure in my position for many years. You know, it's...
Well, you left on your own terms, so...
Yeah.
Basically, we're secure.
Yeah, it's to some degree.
You left before it got insecure.
Yeah. Oh, well, I saw the writing on the wall. It was one of those things where
The wall of insecurity.
Yes, the wall of insecurity. It's... If you haven't... there's just so much involved with it, and it's just one of those things where... I think a lot of people get caught off guard when you first go through it. All right, well, hey, you know what? We have a new band this week, the Octopus Project.
Huh.
I reached out to them.
Are there eight of them?
Yes. No, I don't know.
There could be nine, because if you include the head, you know.
I don't think there is. I think they just... I think they just play double duty, so there's four of them.
What's Bob do? Oh, he just sits back here and jingles chains through the whole song.
You're like, we don't pay him much. But yeah, whatever. No, so yeah, a pretty interesting band. I reached out to him a while ago, and then midweek I got a reply, sure. And I was like, huh, okay. I had forgot I even wrote him, which, because in this world when I'm reaching out to bands, the let's just say the success rate of reply is like maybe 38%, you know, give or take. It's not a slam dunk when I reach out to a band that they're going to say yes and I'm going to get any response from it.
On the flip side, though, what is it like when bands reach out to you?
It's amazing. It's a waterfall of, oh my God, there's so much music to sort through, which is good too, you know, because whatever. So here...
It reminds me of the old saying, beggars can't be... No.
Beggars can't be choosers.
But that works in both directions. When you got all these guys flooding their stuff in that they want you to play, that makes you the belle of the ball there.
Yeah.
And when it's the other way around, you know.
Yeah. beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
But I will. I'm playing it. I'm playing some cuts off of a very odd. I never heard of this movie, so I have. They have a soundtrack that they did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was like Kumiko. Yeah, that's what it was. And it's and I was like, what is this? And I thought it was an anime, almost like what was that one that I really loved, the Kubo and the Two Strings or something like that, because the cover looked like that, but it wasn't. It was a live action Japanese movie. Kind of the story is a very humdrum life of a trapped salary woman in Japan watches Fargo and thinks that that's an actual where they buried the treasure, so she comes to America to get this treasure. I never heard of it, and I was like, well, it was really weird.
The plot you're describing sounds familiar to me.
Well,
I haven't seen it. Definitely haven't seen it.
Yeah, but so it's pretty cool. I listen to music, and
if you think about it, that's meta, too. A movie based off of a plot of another movie.
It was so... I watched a few clips of it on YouTube, and I was like, maybe. I don't know.
You'll like the music.
I did like the music quite a bit.
I mean, you'll like the music in the movie, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know the soundtrack's good, so.
I sure do. And I listened to it, and it was kind of very touching, the soundtrack. And I was like, wow, this is powerful music. So I'm going to play some cuts from that. So this is The Octopus Project from Kumiko.
I'm a sophisticated sex robot sent back through time to change the future for one lucky lady.
Minnie me loves chocolate. Scotty do.
Well, I like chocolate fine. I just...
Scotty do.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was very familiar. Hang on, let me do what I do. Would you stop?
How about you, Noah?
How about a what?
How about you, Noah?
What are you...
How about you, Noah?
I don't even...
How about you, Noah?
Honestly, isn't this...
How about you do, ladies and gentlemen, Scotty do.
It's happening. It's wild. And it's now. It's the Fonda Festival of Motion Picture Entertainment. Three big hits starring that easy rider Peter Fonda in three completely different roles. In The Wild Angels, Peter tangles with the real McCoy, the Hell's Angels of Venice, California. In Spirits of the Dead, he joins with Brigitte Bardot, Alain Delon, and Terrence Stamp in recreating one of Edgar Allan Poe's most terrifying tales. In The Trip, Peter teams with Dennis Hopper and Susan Strasberg for a dramatic journey into the weird world of the psychedelic. It's a complete Fonda festival. The Trip, Spirits of the Dead, and the classic The Wild Angels, all in color. Don't miss the many moods of Peter Fonda in the Fonda Festival. Three memorable Peter Fonda hits on one program. Rated R.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look. Just a flesh wound.
So I would behoove you do not go to the Peter Fonda Festival. I don't think that's playing this week. So anyway, that was the trailer I played was from Peter Fonda Festival. That's not this week. Okay, so I played for you the Kumiko soundtrack, the Octopus Project. I played Discovery, Plan, Airport, and Cafe. I like those easy to read titles. Those are way better than what I'm usually trying to muddle through. So yeah, good stuff. I'll be playing a lot more from them. They have tons of albums. Sadly, I'm doing the old rip from their official YouTube, which I should have just reached out and say, hey, can you hook me up with a Dropbox link, you know, because I have to start doing that. A lot of these bands would do it, you know.
Mail them to you, email them to you,
whatever. I don't care. Yeah, just because I don't think they want me playing the rips from YouTube, you know. Some might, but some don't. So very good stuff. Make sure you check out Octopus Project. They're on Facebook. They're very active. They're one of those groups that's always on there and always doing stuff. So make sure you check them out and support the bands that support us, as I often say. You were talking a little bit about some of the music. You recently got a Blammo pack for $1.99. Was that all? That was all. It was a rip, right?
It wasn't a rip, but it was a digital.
Digital.
It was
off
Amazon.
Yeah. So you got a nice thing of. Old 50s music, which is really cool. The download code, you got a whole bunch of 50s music, and you were talking a little bit about, like, the, this is off air, and I was like, well, this is perfect honor. So you're talking a little bit about, like, the voices, how they weren't so melodically tuned as now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded a decent number of them, and, okay, so what this was top 100 songs from the 1950s.
Nice.
And, so I guess... On average, you'd say, 10 songs a year. So originally what I was pointing out was, if you think about that, 100 songs sounds like a lot, but over 10 years, that's really not.
It's nothing. And there's so much music released every year.
You always hear these collections from other eras, and it makes it sound like our music is such crap, because, like, these are memorable. Like, I wasn't alive in the 50s, but I remember a lot of this music because I've heard it all my life,
Yeah, yeah.
And so you kind of get this impression, like, first of all, that... today's stuff is all crap, but when you consider, we're living with today's stuff, we're getting the first run of all of it, and a lot of what we're hearing today, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people aren't going to be remembering or playing.
It'll be distilled down to those 10 from that year, and you're like, oh my God, it was so great.
Yeah, exactly. You'll think that's what you're not realizing is that's the most popular sampling from that era.
Yeah.
And how much stuff, and if anything, we're now we're on a global stage, it's going to be even harder to cull it out because you're dealing with, popular music from all over the world being...
A good example would be that one group that I play on air. I play on there, Lulu's Marble. Now, I found this record, just a blind buy from Japan. It was one of those things where it was a simple blind buy, I brought it home, fell in love with this band. They had three albums before the lead singer died. I got all three of them. I got everything I could, every representation of this group I could, because I loved it that much. They were on the stage with like 5, 6, 7, 8 in my life, and I was like, no one's ever heard of them. They're not even on eBay.
Like, well, they are nobody. They're nothing. They're just some band in Japan that came and went in the blink of an eye. It was literally 96 through 2001 or something like that, and that was the end of it. And it's like, that, to me, represents what kind of what you're talking about. Like, most music, and there is some incredibly passionate, powerful, awesome music, just you just can't find it. You have to be in the know to even know that they're alive or know that they're around.
Or that,
you know?
Or that it ever existed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it just, they come and go, and the band breaks up. Oh, hell, what was that? Husqvarna?
Husqvarna, yeah.
Remember, they were on the, or and Moron Envy. Those are the two that I had back in the day when we had the TV show. Whoever heard of that?
It's like Twilight fan fiction. There probably is some good stuff out there.
Oh,
we'll just never find it because
tons.
Who cares?
And now it's even harder.
See, that's a joke. You're like, yeah, because I'm talking about that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, and that, but the, like now it's, and like you even alluded to it, now it's even harder.
Yeah.
That we are in a sea of just everyone jumping up going, look at me, and everyone has a stage because of the internet, and
yep.
That means no one will get noticed, you know.
Yeah.
Except for Adam Carolla. All right, here's some music.
Because of the interest, it'll be worth billions of dollars.
Oh, I like money.
Yeah.
How many billions?
Like 10.
Yeah, suck one. Time machine costs like 20.
Yeah, okay. 30, Friedel. $30 billion.
$30 billion. So if you gave me $30 billion and the time machine is 20, what's the minus of 30 and 20?
It's 80, Friedo. It's $80 billion. That's a mighty big minus, isn't it?
Yeah. I like money, though.
We'll be right back. He's got emotional problems, man.
You mean beyond pacifism?
He's fragile. Very fragile.
Huh? I did not know that.
Oh, my God. That was yet another new one. Tombstones in Their Eyes. I played off of their EP, their press kit I got. I played I Want to Fly, Separate, and Always There. That is off their self-titled album, Tombstones in Their Eyes.
I wonder what that means. Does that mean they're looking at tombstones? Because whenever you say in my eye, that usually means either like, ah!
Oh, yeah.
Something just got in my eye. Everybody, or that means you're, you know, like reflection or I don't know.
Maybe they were like driving a dune buggy and they were drunk and they were going through like a graveyard and they were running over things and someone like flew up and hit them in the eye and they're like, ah, I got a tombstone in my eye. My like, doctor hey, said I'm not supposed to get tombstone in my eye. I have a note.
Yeah.
No, yeah. They're pretty good. Good stuff. All right. So, I'm trying to think of what else has been going on.
Okay, well, two things. One, you know, you started to talk about the sound, you know, we were talking about the music and stuff, you know, sound quality. And yeah, when you listen to a lot of those songs, a lot of those people weren't really singers.
No.
It's weird because when you have an Elvis Presley or a Dean Martin come on as one of the songs, and then you have like "Bye Bye Love," and it's like the music is catchy and you remember it, but a lot of those people's voices just weren't appealing. Although, to be fair, they were also all playing on equipment that was very different from what we have today, and in studios that were not as acoustically rich, but. But it was like we didn't pay as much attention to that then.
Well, even like the 60s, you know, think of a Janis Joplin or
think of
Ozzy Osbourne. Listen to that guy talk. Yeah. But here he is. He sold 100 million billion records. And you're like, he's regarded as one of the greatest singers of metal, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe not singers, whatever. You know, he's up there. Yeah. He's top of lists. And he can't sing for crap, you know. His voice is gravelly or rough. So there's a niche, but it's such a weird. It is different from the sound back in the '50s, you know. I wanted to get these two. The Third Man Records had these the Rise and Fall of Paramount Records.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to get them because I was like, oh my god, that's so awesome. That's the way to get. It's almost like a Cliff Notes for look at me. I have a rich knowledge of old music, and but there's $400 each now. I remember somebody had...
Those are some pretty expensive Cliff Notes.
Yeah, I remember somebody had let me borrow a trial-only version of that stuff, but I lost it at some point. Hmm. I really wanted to, you know, I go back and listen to some of it, and it is that kind of stuff. It's this music that you're like, wow, you know. Go down the rabbit hole of, I'll go on YouTube and, like, just do, like, earliest recordings. And it's all those Edisons and stuff like that, which one day we're going to play those Edison cylinders I have... On this show, I'm going to record
them. Copyright's up on him.
Exactly. Come at me, Edison. Anyway,
so, he's got a pretty powerful estate, but yeah, but the copyright is up.
So, yeah, these are from the 1890s,
and I'm not sure if our listeners know what you're talking about. That this was music recorded on. This was competing with the original record players. The
cylinders, the little cylinders.
So there were wax cylinders. Yep,
and I have some of them. Yeah. So you know, it's one of those things where.
Mal, the king of dead media.
I sure am. You know,
like long dead media.
Just the way they recorded stuff back then was not, you know, even the Ozzy's first album, the Black Sabbath's first album, which was just this meteoric rise of, oh my God, listen to these guys. They have a lot of hate in them. It was like done on a 4-track, and they had the studio for 2 days. They didn't go back the second day. They were like, well, we're done. See ya. And they like left. They did their 8 songs and left. And they're like, well, you have another day. And they're like, nah, we're good. Yeah. Just stamp it and let's go. You know, and they just went out to the bar. And you just, you're like, wow, imagine that. Because now it's like, take 27, take 28, take 30.
I'm taking a year off to produce my album.
You're like, yeah, okay. And Sabbath was like, no, we kind of got to get back on the road to make money because we're poor.
I mean, but you think about it. Back then, you know, a lot of it was we have the ability to record it. And then it was we have the ability to record, you know, independent tracks and mix them together. And then now it's like, well, we have the ability to make a cat screaming sound like Mariah Carey.
This computer was going to make you sound better. I was like, well, flip the switch.
Yeah.
Let's make this record. You know,
so, you know, in 50 years, people, humans will not even be involved in the music creation process. Algorithms will generate the words, generate the
Did you hear the newest song from Plant?
The actual
The Plant in my yard. Yeah. It is a song is really good. It's like garagey.
And then come up with the most appealing human-sounding voice to, you know.
Yeah. As dumb as that sounds, I actually ripped from YouTube when I was down that rabbit hole just getting up these weird songs from the 1800s. And, you know, and there's some really odd, there's some oddities out there that are just fantastic. But one of them is sounds from space. This is from NASA. Planets make sounds. And in the eerie setting of a space of space where it's quiet except for this thing.
I think I remember you talking about this one time.
I listened to it. I have a loop. Not a loop. I have about 10 or 12 minutes of this footage that I got. And I listened to it at work. And I was like, it's unsettlingly beautiful. I'll put it that way. Like, it's this eerie sound of, here's what Jupiter sounds like. You're like, is Jupiter a whale? Is that a space whale? You know, yeah, whatever. And you're like, wow, it's just so... It's one of those things where you just don't realize it, you know, because everything in nature makes music or makes harmony, has their own frequencies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Things I don't know about, but I've heard said, so I believe it.
No.
You know, I'm not that smart. But the it was such a weird recording, and I'm going to go out and find more of them because it's just this, it's almost eerie, you know, like I said, but it's beautiful at the same time, so I don't know.
How much time we got left?
Well, some.
Okay. I was going to say, we were going to do our month late review of Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, we'll do that. We still have 3 minutes of this one, and then music, and then goodbye.
Okay.
So I finally got to see Blade Runner 2049. I watched the original one the day before. I mean, I've seen the original one, but you have to brush up on your material.
And the second one was definitely not forgiving if you didn't see the first one.
No, it was what an incredible story. Yeah. What a beautiful, that movie was incredible. I mean,
you know, I mean, a lot of people complained about how long it was and how there were scenes, lots of scenes of people looking at things, and you know, and it's like, to me, that's the perfect example of cinema as an art form, not just entertainment, but as an art, because that was the. Like a shining example of show, don't tell.
Yeah, you know? And Hateful Eight was the same way.
When they're doing that, you're supposed to be thinking about what that character is feeling at that moment. You know, they're expressing it without saying, "I'm sad, I'm confused." You know,
yeah. And why are they showing it to you? It's a reason.
Yeah,
they ain't just showing you a lamp.
Yep.
So why? Yep. Okay, now this is actually using the film medium as it's supposed to be used,
right.
Where it doesn't have to be a 3-second quick cut to some screaming whatever.
Exactly.
You can kind of use your own internal, you know, thought process to kind of go, I wonder, you know, how is that making me feel? Why does that make me feel that way? You know, and there was enough there to make you to say, here's a visual cue. You should probably be a little tense right now.
Right.
You know, but... What a
the way it
movie.
Used sound, the way it used light, you know, some of the really unsettling music in scenes where it didn't seem like it warranted it really gave you an idea of what was actually going on. And seeing it a second time, one of the interesting things I noticed is that there's a lot of scene building stuff that kind of just comes up in a very secondary manner. Like, why are things the way they are? They talk about things like, oh, this is real wood, this was this, you know, which tells you things about the world they're in today without actually explicitly saying it.
You're a rich man, you have a piece of wood.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Which, you know, the tree that's being held up by, you know, the dead tree that's being held up. Things like doing radiation testing. Well, there's only one place in the world. Well, why is he out here? Why is this place abandoned? You know, it's saying that there was some kind of a nuclear fallout without actually getting into that. Which,
boy, sorry to cut you off. Yeah, it was neat. Batista has certainly turned a corner in his acting career. In Guardians of the Galaxy, I first noticed it. But boy, he's come on as an actual actor, and it's kind of pleasant. Because he's a physically imposing fellow.
Yeah.
And it was just really great to see.
Last week, Japanese scientists placed explosive detonators at the bottom of Lake Loch Ness to blow Nessie out of the water. Sir Court Godfrey of the Nessie Alliance summoned the help of Scotland's local wizards to cast a protective spell over the lake and its local residents, and all those who seek for the peaceful existence of our underwater ally.
Ah,
All right, so of course, since I talked about them, I had to let them, you know, represent. That was Lulu's Marble off of their last CD, sadly, called Love Rock. I played Love Rock, The Witch, and Jack the Ripper, all classics in their own right. I know, I got to figure out a way to get one last 5678 song on this, otherwise I think I lose my badge. Yeah. Anyway, we kind of cut off quickly, but yeah.
So, in a nutshell, Blade Runner 2049, not the tentpole movie that it was advertised as. It is not a blockbuster style movie. It got a blockbuster budget, but it's definitely not a movie for everyone.
No.
It is long. Yeah. It is slow paced in a lot of parts. There is plenty of action, but it's definitely a thinking type of movie.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Into that kind of stuff, you guys should definitely go see it while it's still in the theaters. Support it, because the only way crap like this continues to get made is by people actually noticing
Pulling
it.
Up. Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. And Blade Runner, for such a built-in audience, I thought it was going to just shatter records because everyone talks about it. Blade Runner, the original one, is one of those. Like, oh, if you're say you like sci-fi, well, then you got to have all 17 copies of or 17 versions of Blade Runner. I don't, but I like the movie. You know, I understood it was very influential.
Right.
That was when that movie came out. It was like, wow, this is pretty cool, and they left a lot up to the imagination. It changed how sci-fi was presented to,
the disheveled future was essentially created by that. The idea that everything, and you know, in that era we were dealing with the height of the Cold War, and the idea was, you know, the future might actually be pretty bleak, and that was one of the first movies that actually gave us a glimpse of a possibility of a non-utopian future.
The other ones were like the 80 action movies, but that was just after the war, dystopian, everything's right. Everyone's dead except for a couple roving idiots, you know.
Yeah, but
so this one was like, no, there's still people alive. It's just not so great to live here right now.
Right, it's like, how is society... Yeah, you know, it was the first of, we're progressing towards everything being better. Well, maybe not everything.
Yeah, no, not everything.
And, and you know, like, watching it now, yes, the movie hasn't aged amazingly. But you really have to understand and appreciate the influence that that movie had on so many directors and so many science fiction writers and stuff going forward.
Boy, this is a new one. I love it. Yeah. I would definitely recommend people see it. Especially if you saw the first one, go see the second one. I'll definitely buy it. You know, hopefully not some weird box set thing that costs hundreds of dollars, but you never know.
You get the director's cut. It's 6 hours long.
You're like, oh my God, I just want that one I watched. It was fine. I was fine with that. I did run out and buy Hateful Eight, and I got Hateful Eight soundtrack and everything like that. You know, that was one that was a long movie, but I didn't care at all. I loved that movie, you know. I like those. It was based off of like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico and all that stuff. That's the way those were shot.
Yeah.
They were long, sweeping vistas, and the camera would just sit on some ugly guy sitting there blowing a a fly off his face for a half a minute. You know, you're like, well, whatever. You know, yeah. So that's, he kind of homaged that for that one. You know, but I guess that's gonna be it for this week because I'm playing a 5, 6, 7, 8 song. So you know, you got anything else? Are we good to go?
We're good to go.
All right,
good to go for this week.
So here you go. Here is the 5, 6, 7, 8, and we are out of here for this week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
I am still there. Hooray!
Marsalis threw Tony Rockyhar out a four-story window for giving me a foot massage. Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
Well, I mean, the time I was told, it sounded reasonable.
Marsalis throwing Tony out of a four-story window for massaging my feet seemed reasonable.
No, it seemed excessive, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.